The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
The internet's full of true crime podcasts. More and more are added to the list every day. Figuring out where to start or where to go next can be overwhelming. But have no fear, I'm here to help. I'm Bob Ruff, and this is the place to find your next true crime binge. Right, after that was Sarah, I think you can agree that was the most ridiculously complicated audio setup I've ever been through.
It was the blind leading the blinder, I think would be fair.
Yeah, we were just discussing before we hit record. I'm here with Sarah Ferris from the Clueless podcast, spelled Clooghless. Interesting. We'll explain why later. It's spelled that way. But neither of us understand technology hardly at all. And so we decided, you know how we can make this work? Let's figure out the most complicated possible way to set up the audio.
We nailed the brief.
Yeah, we got it. Yeah. So hopefully this is all going to work out and it'll sound super clean. But Sarah, thanks for joining me all the way from, you're in London, right?
I am in London. Yeah.
But you're from New Zealand.
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm originally from New Zealand, but I've been in London for about, almost 12 years now.
Okay. So, and when we're speaking, I don't know when everybody's going to hear this, but CrimeCon UK just happened. I thought about going, but it was too close to the other CrimeCon. It's just too much travel and stuff for me. But you said there was a near disaster at CrimeCon in London this year.
Honestly, it was snatched from the jaws of defeat from the most amazing CrimeCon team. But we had an actual fire on the Saturday night of CrimeCon. And, I mean, you couldn't have paid for it. We literally had flames and a cordoned off scene outside the CrimeCon building. So people were kind of thinking, oh, is this all part of the experience? But honestly, the team at CrimeCon did so well. So we managed to crack on and had an amazing event. Yeah, it's great. I love CrimeCon. Awesome. You can never have too many.
Right. So, I mean, we're talking a fire. Like, you guys were outside and could see flames from outside?
We couldn't see flames from outside, but it was coming, billowing up from the kitchen, apparently, underneath. So, yeah, I think it was an electrical fire because I think then after that we were using our torches and things like that. Felt very much like a detective in a crime scene sort of situation afterwards. So I think everybody got just a little bit of, we should have been, you know, had to pay more for those tickets, to be fair.
Right. So this happened Saturday night. Did the event continue then with no power, or did the power eventually come back on?
Well, the hotel didn't get the power back on, but the CrimeCon crew managed to like sweep, and I don't know where they got them from on a Sunday morning, but lights to light the hallway so people could actually access the building. So yeah, they did amazing. And we managed to catch up and get all of the content that was on the schedule back on track by sort of mid-afternoon, and away we went. So yeah, it was great.
Nice. Did you happen to come across, I have two very good friends in London that I know are there, Kayla and Lindsay, and they run the Just Killin' Time, like this subscription box deal. Did you come across them at all?
Well, no, because I was pretty much chained to the podcast row, and I don't think they were in podcast row. I think they might have been on the level below us, so I didn't get much. I was either doing a podcast live or, you know, chained to my desk.
They're the ones that brought me over to do my UK tour a few years ago. Very cool people, and they do like a monthly subscription box where you get like every month they send you, you know, all kinds of true crime paraphernalia and goodies and stuff every month. That's justkillintime.org, I think, people. Not a sponsor, but check them out. They're based out of the UK. And so Sarah, you make all kinds of podcasts. You've been making podcasts for a minute. I see that you currently or already did. There's two other true crime podcasts, Stop the Killing and Conning the Con. Are those still ongoing?
Well, so Conning the Con is the reason that I ended up doing podcasts in the first place. And it only came out about a year and a half ago. And it probably makes sense for me to tell you the why I did that one because and how I ended up in podcasting from that point because Conning the Con was actually the true story of my little sister's experience of dating a serial con man. So she had swiped right on Tinder, as you do. She dated a guy for 6 months, and then the day after, she'd put like a chunk of change into his bank account for a property investment was the day that she discovered his actual real identity, his real name, that he was a serial fraudster, and he was just out of prison. But the kicker was he didn't realize she'd discovered his real identity at that stage. So we actually hit record and spent the next 2.5 months taking down the con man. So we turned the hence the name Conning the Con. So that's my entry into podcasting. And I didn't have any background in podcasting. And when we were living this experience with this con man, which got very intense, like he'd fled the country, we had to lure him back. There was a lot going on. My sister and I said, we're living in a Netflix documentary. We need to be recording it. And I said, I don't think I can do a documentary, but maybe I can work out on GarageBand how to do a podcast. So, we sat on the content that we'd had recorded for about a year and then seesawing whether or not we wanted to share the story because it's obviously a very personal story and scared about how people would react to it. People are very much, there's a lot of shame and myths about how people are conned. But we did share it. And then, so that's how Conning the Con came out. So that is actually a completed series that's already out and you can binge that whenever you want.
Did you, when you decided to record, when you guys were conning the con artist, were you recording him with the intention of making a podcast or were you recording him just to get it all on recorded then later decided, hey, this could be a podcast?
Well, what happened was we didn't record him because he never, ever contacted by phone ever again. He was all via email after that. So we have an actor that voices his emails and his autobiography, the Tonka trilogy, which he gave us, which is just a little bit of comedy gold. And we were recording, it was almost like reaction videos to it as it unfolded. We were just like, you know, he sent my sister his autobiography to explain that I don't want to give too much away, but, and that he explained lots of things about his life that led him to the point that he was at, and why he should still be getting her money essentially. And my sister Emma would get these like emails through and just dial me right up and we would just hit record and she'd read them fresh to me. And I'd be like, oh my goodness, this is absolutely batshit. Absolutely crazy. So, yeah, and then the podcast has a lot of other voices in it that we interviewed and brought in a psychologist as well who runs through it and discusses the red flags. So, there's a lot of sound, it's texturally a lot of voices in it.
All I was thinking is you said that you guys just like called each other up and real quick hit record, and I was thinking it didn't go that smoothly when I tried to call you up this morning.
Now, the difference there is, Bob, I'm a bit of a control freak. So what you don't realize is that you ended up doing it my way at the end of the thing. And
that did happen, didn't it?
It did happen. Yeah, I totally
I was like, this is how we do it. And you're like, no, I'm going to need you. Like, that's the whole like dumb like a fox. Like, I just can't figure this out. So why don't you do it my way? You tricked me. You conned me.
I learned a few tricks along the way. What can I say?
So Conning the Con, which after you're explaining this to me, I need to go listen to now. That sounds incredible.
Yeah.
You have that, and then you have Stop the Killing, which is a short form podcast, and you're with the former head of the FBI's active shooter program is like your co-host. How does that happen?
Do you know what's hilarious? So when I was at CrimeCon, anytime I'm ever talking to people about it and I say, Conning the Con, this is the story, fell into podcasting, and they go, oh, tell me about Stop the Killing. They never once expect me to say, oh, I do a podcast with the former head of the FBI's active shooter program, Catherine Schweit, because they're just like, this woman is clearly a Muppet. How would that connection happen? But but it did. What can I say? So Catherine and I met on an app, and it was an app that was for creators. So when Con in the Con happened, it kind of got quite a lot of like ears on it. It was quite successful, like really fast. We didn't know what was going to happen. And it actually, not to blow my own trumpet, just to know it's not really crap, it did come runner-up at the International Women's Podcast Awards for cliffhanger drama. So what happened is somebody had said, as a creator, can you come onto this app? And we did a Zoom call with other creators, and Catherine happened to be on that Zoom call. And she said, I said, look, I don't know why I'm on this app. I'm an imposter. I've never done podcasts before, so I don't know why I'm here, as they went around the group. And then she said, when it came to her turn to answer the same question, which was, why are you wanting to come on this app? She said, I'm an imposter too, like Sarah. And then she proceeded to say, I'm the former head of the FBI's active shooter program. I went, well, clearly this woman doesn't even know what imposter syndrome is, because she deserves to be there 100%. And then the second thing I thought was, I need to do an interview with her. And when we did, I stalked her a little bit on Twitter, and when we actually connected, we had a conversation. She said, I've always wanted to do a podcast. And I said, well, you know, I've kind of worked it out. And we just connected that way, and we really meshed and gelled, and we were kind of like, well, we could really get the message out there. I'm a listener. You've got a story. You've got the information, the research, and we just want to be able to give that information out in the most consumable way so that people have the facts about mass shootings. And that's how it kind of happened. So we've already released season one of that, and season two is just starting. We've released last week, and we've got incredible guests on that, like the former principal of Columbine High School. We've got a woman that stopped a mass shooting in a school just with her voice for 90 minutes. She talked down a child with a loaded gun in her office, and parents of the Parkland school shootings. We've got professors of criminology. So it's just really jam-packed with information that we can hopefully give people the facts so they can feel informed. That's the idea of it. And, yeah, so that one comes out as a case each episode, essentially.
Super cool. So I mean, essentially, you and Catherine are on an app. You both swipe right, and then you have
I think she swiped left initially on me. I just kept stalking her
a little bit.
Yeah,
right.
I'm nothing if not persistent. Then, you've already fallen for my gaslighting charms, Bob. We know this.
Right. Yeah, I feel like I don't know how to work my own computer right now, and I don't know how that happened. Yeah, I don't. And you're not done there. You have another podcast that's not true crime related called Guilty Greenie. Oh. Is that one still ongoing too?
Yeah, I'm just recording season two of that at the moment as well. So on that same app, I was doing a show that was called Community, and it was basically a bit of a laugh, and we would have like two truths and a lie, and we'd have test the audience to see how well they could actually spot a lie that was being fed to them. And on that, I met an American sustainability influencer and writer, and she's a greenie, and she had all the knowledge, and I was kind of like, my goodness, like, you could really train me to stop crapping all over this planet. Maybe we should do something together. And so that's how the Guilty Greenie came about. And we kind of, you know, she gives me a challenge that my family and I complete every week, which I record the results to, which is varies from successful to hilarious pretty much, because I've got, you know, some stubborn teens in there as well. So, yeah, no, it's good fun. We really like it. And I'm learning all the way along. All the podcasts that I do are pretty much, I want to come out of it like just learning something. So that's my purpose.
So that's 1, 2, 3 plus Clueless. That's 4 podcasts you have going all within the last couple of years. What did you do before that? Like you said, you didn't have any audio background or anything. Like, what No. were you in the media space? What did you do before all this?
No, I have a property business. So I basically, you know, did flipping of properties, that kind of thing, property development. And I still do that. And yeah, so I think that's probably, it gives me a bit of space to be able to do that because I work for myself. But yeah, I sometimes it's been like a year and a half since this, and I think sometimes I look at my life and go, how the heck have I ended up here? But I am, and I enjoy it.
I had the same thing. I mean, I was a fireman the next thing I knew I was a podcaster. I mean, yeah, it's interesting. It's always an odd conversation with people. Like, what do you do now? Like, listen, I don't really want to talk about it. It was a weird story is not where I expected to be, but this just is what it is now. Are the real estate prices in the UK like insane right now like they are in the US, or is that just a US thing?
No. 18-year property cycle. Let me tell you, that's another podcast, but definitely yeah. We're going up to the boom stage right now. And I mean, I'll tell you what, New Zealand, where I'm from, they have had the most ridiculous price growth in the last like year. It's gone up something like 50%.
Oh, that's nothing. And in the US, I mean, at least in our area here in the Midwest, like house prices have doubled in like 100% gain over a 2-year period. I mean, and you see it all. Wow. You see people listing houses for $600,000, and you can look on Zillow and see they bought the house 2 years ago for $250,000. And then they're selling for over asking, like it's insane. I didn't know.
No, well, it's definitely. I think it's that built up tension after COVID as well. Everybody was like, "Oh, everything's going to crash, everything's going to burn." But there's just been this appetite for people to kind of either expand their living spaces because we're all living in the and working in our houses. So people have really shifted in what they want. So yeah, no, I think it's happening everywhere, Bob.
Yeah, it was like this. At least here, it was like this perfect storm of. You know, when we all should have been probably feeling a little pain during COVID, it's like, no, we just keep printing money until everybody's got plenty of money.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's great. I was just curious what's going on in other countries with it. Cause I keep getting told by my friend, cause I actually liquidated my rental property because I was like, I'm probably never going to see this price of it again.
Yeah.
In the next 20 years. So I got rid of it.
Yeah.
But I have friends that are also in real estate that are like, no, this is the new normal. And I'm like, this feels an awful lot like a bubble to me. So,
After this, we'll get on another call and we'll have a chat about the 18-year property cycle. But that's a whole different podcast.
Like, I don't really want to talk about, I want to just talk about that now. But I think we should move on for the audience. I'm like, 18-year cycle, do tell.
Oh, my goodness.
That's the only
other podcast experience that I had was I had been on a property podcast as a guest at times. So that would be the only window into podcasting that I'd had.
True or false, we should expect in the next couple of years these prices to come plummeting down.
I would say it's predicted. And look, you know, I'm no expert, but if you stick to the 18-year property cycle, 2026 in London is probably looking where you want to get out of. That's what we call the winner's curse, is where you might buy at the top of the cycle. But with anything with property, if you hold it long enough, people, it will come right if you've bought it in somewhere that's not horrific.
Right.
Get your tips here. Sign up to my property podcast, which I don't actually have, but I've got an opening for one more in my life.
Listen, Sarah, you and I will start a podcast all about real estate property. I have no background or no expertise whatsoever, neither. Which, you know, that's never stopped me from making a podcast about something. We'll just go just go with it.
I think I'm proof of the pudding that that's true.
Right. There you go.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
All right, so now tell me, the podcast we're talking about today is called Clueless, The Long Con. And again, Clueless is Clooghless, named after Barry Clue, who is going to be our subject today.
Mm-hmm.
But yes. It covers the story of one of the largest Ponzi schemes in New Zealand history. And again, your family gets conned a lot.
I know.
Because this again has a connection to your family. So you kind of explain like what the podcast is about.
Yeah, where to start with that one? So a month after my little sister Emma had discovered that she was dating this serial con man, my parents-in-law, so, you know, related on my husband's side of the family, discovered that they were in this Ponzi scheme, that they had actually been with an authorized financial advisor. So he was government approved, and he had actually known them for 40 years. Hadn't really, so 40, hence the name Clueless, The Long Con. And as you alluded to, his name is Barry Clough, spelled K-L-O-O-G-H. So the only good thing that man ever did was give me that brilliant pun for a title.
It's a perfect, clever name. I love it.
I know. God, he just like served that up on a platter for me, I swear. So there was 81 victims and $16 million that went west. And what he really did was he kind of groomed an entire town in New Zealand for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And he would start with he had several kind of methods in his playbook. But what he tended to do is because he had such a long time before he got caught, he would start with things like an insurance policy and then – you know, build the confidence, and then over time, that young family that had taken out an insurance policy would be ready to have a little bit more money. They've paid off their mortgage, so they would then have some money to invest. And who are they going to go to but this financial advisor that has done the insurance policy for them maybe 10 years beforehand? Mm-hmm. So he just gently groomed people in so many different ways, and he was very much embedded in the community. He was in the like operatic societies, are very much into amateur dramatics. And yeah, I mean, like what he ended up doing was almost doing a life cycle of people, start with the insurance policy and end up with their raping their entire life savings, their retirement funds. And if you think about it, 40 years, people have aged into retirement. So by the time Barry Clough has got hold of all of your money, you're at the end of your ability to work and earn that money back. And what happened is when his whole scheme came falling down, the stories in it are so horrific that, you know, they really stay with you. In particular, one of them that I really touched me entirely was a 70-year-old man who had been retired for 18 months before Barry Clough's scheme had come crashing down. He has stage 4 cancer. And at the age of 70, he has to work full time because he has no other form of income whilst doing chemotherapy and, you know, all of his cancer treatments. He has to just keep on working through it. And these people weren't like a Bernie Madoff kind of scheme where you had to have sort of $400 million to get into the scheme. These are just salt of the earth, hardworking people that scrimped and saved over their lifetime and trusted a man who was government authorized to actually, you know, go to them as the government advises you to do, go and get proper advice from somebody who's authorized so that you can be set up in your retirement. And he was just a complete con man. So in the podcast, we have a forensic psychiatrist on it who, if you have ever make it to London Crime Con, you will know he's quite the man about town at London Crime Con, Dr. Shahom Das. And he is a forensic psychiatrist that's worked in Broadmoor. He's written a book. He's got an incredible YouTube channel as well called A Psych for Sore Minds. And he unpacks all that kind of psychopathic behavior that it takes for somebody to do that to people that he knows so well. So, yeah. So that's hopefully I've explained that a little bit.
Yeah, so for 40 years was I'm curious what the forensic psychiatrist's views were on that, because like he had to have made because this was a true Ponzi scheme where like there never actually was an investment, so he's taking money and telling people that he's investing it, and then there's just no investment. He's just taking it and then taking somebody else's, and if somebody wants to cash out, he takes some of your money and gives them some of that money to try to give the impression that things are moving along.
Like the hamster wheel. So you've always got to keep it fed and to keep it turning. Well, he actually managed to find a loophole in the system. So what he managed to do is, and I mean, I don't want to give too much away in the podcast because I do go into it in more depth so that you can understand it because it's quite complicated at times. But there was a system that was like an online ledger. And in one instance, it was almost like, it's really hard to explain it, but essentially it's like an Excel spreadsheet for a financial advisor who can then keep a track of everybody's investments over a portfolio. Now, some of those investments you could actually make on that platform legitimately, and he would do that. Others you could just write in so that as an investment, like a financial advisor, you knew that same client had that amount of money with you supposedly invested as well. Anything that was in the other column, in what was called the external column, was just fake money. He'd stolen it. He'd written it off. But what he also did was he, over the years, worked out ways to get legitimately invested shares from the investors that were on the platform legitimately and bring them into the other column, which was the fake Ponzi scheme. Like, as you say, you know, it's just in and out feeding fake money to fake, yeah, fake accounts, et cetera.
The part that's fascinating with that is, like, when is enough enough? Because he ended up stealing, what, $16 million?
Mm-hmm.
Like, at some point, mm-hmm. you know, is it just greed? Is it just, is just something is just totally wrong with this guy? Like, why when he hit $5 million or $10 million, didn't he say, okay, now I'm going to take off to the Cayman Islands and disappear?
Yeah.
But he's he continues to do it for 40 years until he has $16 million, and then eventually he gets caught.
Well, I think, I mean, the psychiatrist would say that, you know, somebody that's displaying that psychopathic behavior, their element of risk is so much different from you and I. They live in that space of just like always on the red line where you and I would be sweating bullets. That is their resting bitch face. Like, that is literally how they operate all the time. So it's getting inside that mind of somebody. And I think that's the hardest thing for other people to understand, because then as an investor, this person is actively acting like a normal person on the outside, but the internal workings of their mind is just so different from you and I. Well, I say you and I. I've only just met you. I don't know, but
yeah, I'm assuming, Bob. Very well could be a psychopath.
Exactly. Right. So could I.
Assuming that I'm a normie.
Yeah.
Like, I look at it like, What's the end goal? Like, or is he just addicted to the process at some point?
Well, he very much liked the trappings of this life. So he had the fast cars, he had the overseas holidays, he had a full family, for example, and he had a business that he ran, and you know, his family worked in that business as well. So he was he was very much embedded in the community, but he did have an end plan that he told the victims eventually. His end plan was that he was going to, and I mean, it's as ridiculous as it sounds, he was just basically going to, over the next 2 years or whatever years, going to make $2 million and start paying back the elderly first, so that when they retired, they would be able to pull out of this fake Ponzi scheme and fine. And what he didn't realize when he was saying this to the victims as his solution was, Barry, you're just describing an ongoing Ponzi scheme, because you're paying the top people in the pyramid again. Where's the money from the bottom of the pyramid coming from? You just got to bring in more victims each time. So there was no way out. It was just how long you could get away with it for. And after 40 years, mate, you think you're in the clear.
Right, yeah, at some point, yeah. Well, I would say luckily for the victims, but it really still didn't work out for them.
No.
He got caught before he did run away with everybody's money, but then – like your family was conned out of hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the victims. I mean, he's going to die in prison, right? He was sentenced to what, 80 years in prison, something like that.
Are you taking the Mickey? He got, I can't even tell you the exact sentence, but it was something so minimal. So, well, in my mind, let me clarify. He got the scales of justice got him. What did you just read? It's 8 years that he got.
I read Erica's note wrong, and I assumed, because this is so awful, it was 80, but I see now that it says he was sentenced to 8 years in
Do you know what's really, I mean, that's what you weigh up the scales of justice. On one side, you put $15 million and 81 victims, and then what does that actually equate to? Oh, 8 years. He'll be out in five now. And he'll be able to go back and you know, live a life, whereas all of these people are left holding the baby, essentially. They've got nothing.
Yeah, because they got, with the compensation that they got when this was over with, they got, what, 2.5 cents per dollar, approximately, of what they had lost.
And that's yet to be seen. I don't think that'll even come to fruition, because the process of getting that money out is, it's just so difficult. There was nothing left. Either he's hidden it. I mean, the real big question is, what happened to the money? But nobody knows. I mean, like, the forensic trail that happened, it just looks like it was frittered away and either keeping the Ponzi scheme going. So part of it was, you know, people taking money out, people putting money in, and then it was coming out the other side. And then he was living this lifestyle where, you know, he had all these least expensive cars. He was doing holidays all over the world. Yeah.
Just spent it all.
spunked the money.
That's terrible. Well, how did it work out for your parents? I mean, your parents lost a significant chunk of money. Were they diversified enough that they were able to still like take the loss and move on with their retirement?
Yeah, well, I mean, they would say that
completely devastated.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, regardless of how much money they lost or if they had anything to carry on with, the mental and emotional trauma of having it happen to them and all of the other victims is heavy, very heavy. And they were lucky enough that they had diversified a little bit, you know, so they're not going to be brought to their knees by this. However, a lot of the other victims have been brought to their knees by it. And particularly episode 4 in the podcast, people say, why didn't you warn me to hydrate first before that episode? Because it's really, really unbelievable what he does. Yeah. I mean, there's a man in there that loses $45,000, and he said, I feel lucky I only lost $45,000 compared to the other victims. So at what point in life has that become you feel lucky? I think that puts in perspective how much pain there is that he's caused.
Yeah. And a lot of it just depends on what percentage, like what, how much of that were you counting on for your retirement? Because I'm just thinking like through my mind how hard that would be, like you said, like emotionally to go through that, because every dime that's in that retirement account that you've been saving means that that's a sacrifice you made along the way. Like when you decided, I don't want to take this money and buy a car now. I'm gonna sacrifice now so that I can be able to enjoy retirement later. There's a lot that goes into that, and then to find at the end like someone just stole all your money and all that sacrifice was for nothing, and you have nothing left. It's awful.
And like you say, I mean, that's exactly what I say in the podcast. You're right on there, Bob. It's like literally all those opportunity cost moments where you have, you know, some of those people worked their weekends away from their children, missed games so that they could make a little bit of extra bucks to stick it in the retirement fund. And when you say, had they diversified, that's exactly what they thought they were doing. They were investing in what they believed were diversified portfolios from a financial advisor that was giving them a way to spread their bets. And they were not, by any stretch of the imagination, high return investments. You know, these were people that were sensible and were like literally, you know, low to medium risk portfolios with different shares, blue chip shares. They were investing in what they believed were blue chip shares. But it was all a lie, all a lie.
Was there any accountability from the government who put their stamp of approval on this fella?
Well, that's an interesting little question because it's a bit of an elephant in the room, isn't it? It's the first question that I kind of was like, hello, how did this happen with a rubber stamp? And then it comes back to that question of what does authorized mean? And that is where I kind of landed at the end of the series with something that reminded me of I learned it in fifth form economics. So when I was 15 in economics class, there was a saying in Latin, and I remember it really vividly, and it was caveat emptor, and it means may the buyer beware. And it was literally that moment for me where I thought, you cannot trust a government approved. You need to know what that is. And it's really about understanding what the auditing process is for any of those systems in your own country. You know, we go through it in the podcast as well. You know, the little banking tricks that he used, just little simple everyday frauds as well that, you know, you need to be aware of. Yeah.
Yeah. And we have similar issues here. Like I have some investments that I have right now are being affected by our Securities and Exchange Commission, which I believe is the most corrupt organization in the United States. It's incredible what they do and get away with. But I've started the podcast. I'm looking forward to finishing it up. And I want to check out the Conning the Con. That sounds great. Her name is Sarah Ferris. And the podcast is called Clueless. That's Clooghless. Clueless, the Long Con. Check it out along with her other podcast. And it could be your next big true crime binge. Sarah, it has been an absolute pleasure getting to chat with you today.
You too, Bob.
True Crime Binge is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Audioboom. Produced and edited by Mike Bussing. Music and artwork by Shane Yoder of PutThemInASong.com. Our website, TrueCrimeBinge.com, was created by Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com. If you're a listener and would like to recommend a future guest or a podcaster that would like to request an interview, you can do so right on our website. And again, that web address is TrueCrimeBinge.com. If you're enjoying the show, please do me a huge favor and take a minute to rate and review us on iTunes or whatever platform you're using to listen. And make sure you give us a follow on social media. We can be found everywhere at True Crime Binge. Thank you so much for listening, and make sure you tune in next Wednesday morning for another podcaster, another case, and another True Crime Binge.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.